You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday morning, May the 25th, and it's time for our Friday Week in Review, when we welcome in two guests with different perspectives to talk with you about the major political issues of the week. We're going to start with yesterday's vote in Congress on the Iraq War funding bill. No timeline for troop withdrawal. Do you like this or not? The president likes it. Senator Feingold does not. We'll also get the take of our two weekend reviewers on the new immigration deal, the latest with the Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez saga, and much more. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guests. We are happy to have them with us. Matt Rothschild is the editor of the Progressive Magazine. Good morning.
Hey, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
And also by phone, George Petak, former Republican state legislator from Racine, a government relations principal at White Hirschbeck Dudek Government Affairs. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Well, let's start with the House or the Congress passing this Iraq War funding bill. Here's what President Bush had to say about this before congressional action when he held a news conference yesterday at the White House.
Today, Congress will vote on legislation that provides our troops with the funds they need. It makes clear that our Iraqi partners must demonstrate progress on security and reconciliation. My administration and members of Congress from both parties have had many meetings to work out our differences on this legislation. As a result, we removed the arbitrary timetables for withdrawal and the restrictions on our military commanders that some in Congress had supported.
The Wisconsin delegation split 5-3 in favor of this Iraq War spending bill that was approved yesterday. Among Wisconsin's House members, the bill was supported by Republican Representatives Tom Petri, Paul Ryan, and James Sensenbrenner, and Democratic Representatives Steve Kagan and Ron Kind. It was opposed by Democratic Representatives Tammy Baldwin, Gwen Moore, and David Obie. Senator Cole voted in favor of it. Senator Feingold did not. Senator Feingold was assailed Democrats for even caving on this issue. Here he is from earlier this week on the Senate floor.
It was bad enough to have the president again disregard the American people by escalating our involvement in Iraq. Now, too, Congress seems to be ignoring the will of the American people. Mr. President, if the American people cannot count on the leaders they elect to listen to them and to act on their demands, then something is seriously wrong with our political institutions or with the people who currently occupy those institutions. I urge my colleagues to reject the weak supplemental conference report and to stand strong as we tell the administration that it is time to end a war that is draining our resources, straining our military, and undermining our national security.
Well, Matt Rothschild, let's start with you. What do you think of all this?
Well, thank God for Russ Feingold, because at least he stood up strong and spoke loudly and clearly and without compromise on this crucial issue. I mean, it was a shameful day yesterday for the Democrats to cave in on this, and the margins were really lopsided. I mean, 280 to 142 in the House, 80 to 14 in the Senate. This was either spineless or cynical. Spineless because they don't have the spinal fluid to stand up to the president or to the attack ads that they expect to come that are going to say we're not supporting the troops, when in fact getting the troops out of there is the way to support the troops. Cynical if the reason for voting for this, as I believe it was for Rahm Emanuel, one of the House Democratic Council leaders, and also Steny Hoyer, one of the leaders in the House, cynical because they are calculating that if this war keeps going on, it's going to be good for Democrats. It's going to be good for Democrats in 2008, and it's okay for them that 100 U.S. soldiers keep dying every month if it's going to mean the Democrats are going to do better in 2008. That is the height of immorality, and it is disgusting. And I think for people who want this war to end, and that's a majority of the American people, and for peace activists who've been clamoring for the Democrats to get us out of this war, this was a huge slap in the face.
George Petak.
Well, I think what we're seeing is the system at work here. The president has made it clear that that he has certain expectations of the Congress. The Congress, under Democrat control, understands, while they may not support totally what the president is trying to accomplish and what the international community, frankly, is trying to accomplish in Iraq, it looks to me like the Congress has seen fit, and by some fairly significant margins, as Matt referenced, 280 to 142 in the House, and 80 to 14 in the Senate. The entire war in Iraq is a significant and serious problem, as we all acknowledge. Getting out of there with some sort of an arbitrary timeline, I think, shows weakness on the part of the Americans, and shows weakness on the part of the international community. And in my view, that provision alone, removal of a timeline, was the most significant piece. And of course, that brought the support of the president and his pledge to sign the bill. To me, that was a mark of courage on the part of the Congress, as opposed to spinelessness and cynicism, as Matt called it, because they see the importance to the military that removing that timeline and that arbitrarily set deadline would enhance the military's ability to help the Iraqi people show progress toward security, which is a part of the expectation now, and to reconciliation, and showing their ability to manage their country, to govern their country, to secure its borders, and to resolve some of its problems internally. And I think that's been the goal of the president. I think that really is the goal of the American people and the international community, and that's what we hope to accomplish in the months ahead.
Let me bring in a caller, Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Hi. What would happen, or what would have happened, if the Democrats had put in no bill for funding, no funding bill at all?
Matt?
Well, I think Diane hits it right on the head, because the Democrats could have submitted a bill with a timeline to get out of there, or they could have simply done what Diane is suggesting and not fund the war, don't even submit a bill for funding the war. Let's remember, we have a constitutional system where Congress is supposed to declare war. It didn't declare war. Congress has the responsibility for funding the war, the power of the purse. Congress can decide, by not putting up a bill to fund this war anymore, that the war is over. But they chose not to do that. And there was all this talk about, well, we don't have enough votes to override the president's veto. That's not the point. The president needs to get a bill passed if he's going to keep funding the war.
I think what the Democrats have done, though, to their credit, frankly, is to see that providing no funding for a military enterprise any place in the world does nothing but abandon the military altogether. Rightly or wrongly, we are in Iraq. We have been there for a number of years. Some people forget why we went to Iraq.
Why did we go there?
I don't. Well, I don't have a litany of things to spout off to you, Matt, and to the listeners, but I'll say this. Years ago, when Saddam Hussein was in power, he ignored the United Nations. He ignored resolution after resolution after resolution passed by the United Nations, addressing or attempting to address the issues of weapons of mass destruction, of the killing of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi citizens and Kurdistanians and others. The international community expressed strong concern about what was going on in Iraq, and the American military and the American president responded to that. The American president prior to George Bush could have responded in a very different way than he chose to respond, and perhaps we wouldn't be there today. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, and because of the pressure from the international community that was ignored year after year after year by Saddam Hussein, the choice was made to go into Iraq. The choice was supported by the military. The choice today is strongly supported by the military in the sense that we're attempting to build up the Iraqi community, the Iraqi government, the Iraqi security forces, the Iraqi military, so they can stand on their own. Saying that we should abandon the United States military and withdraw our support and withhold funding hangs them out to dry in a way that no Democrat, well, I shouldn't say no Democrat. Obviously, there are Democrats that would like to do that. Frankly, I support the military establishment in the United States, and I support the troops that are over there, and I don't think we should withdraw our support for them by holding back funding for their cause.
It's not about supporting the military or not. It's about supporting this particular war. This particular war. Russ Feingold had submitted a bill that said, you know, we will fund these troops only under the condition that this money be used to bring those troops home.
What did he get? 14 votes?
He didn't. Yeah, but that was a point where, you know, Russ Feingold was not saying we shouldn't fund the military. I'm not saying we shouldn't fund the military at all, though. I don't think we should fund it at $500 billion a throw. But let me just correct the historical record just real briefly.
Very briefly.
Yeah. And the history of it is the UN Security Council did not approve this war. They did not vote for it. Kofi Annan said it was an illegal war. There were no weapons of mass destruction there. That was one reason for going in. The other was Al-Qaeda and Saddam working hand in glove. That wasn't happening either. So, and the fact that this is the allegation from George, this is strongly supported by the military. Well, the brass was against this escalation, and the troops that wanted to get out of there, 70% of the troops said all U.S. troops should be out of there within a year, and that was about 10 months ago.
We're reviewing the news of the week during our Friday Week in Review with Matt Rothschild and George Ptak, and with you, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Maybe just a little bit more on the Iraq War funding bill that was passed in Congress yesterday. We'll also talk after the break about the immigration overhaul compromise, which is getting flack from both sides of the political spectrum, and much more. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned for At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. And Ben will be hosting Your Views on the News after 4, and I'm sure he'll talk more about this Iraq War funding bill as well, which we are doing along with all the other big political stories of the week during our Friday Week in Review. Our two guests this week, Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine, George Ptak, former Republican state legislator, and Marion Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Very quickly, I think that more people feel like I do, that I am disappointed and disgusted with the vote yesterday. And I have to applaud Senator Feingold for sticking to his guns and really, truly representing me and my feelings. And I'm getting really sick and tired of Republicans and people on the right saying that if we don't fully fund this war and support the administration, that we're not supporting our troops. Because, as your other guest so eloquently put it, it has nothing to do with not supporting the troops. And also, I'm getting sick and tired of the right saying, well, perhaps if our past administration had done this or this, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today. I think this administration dug us into this hole. They're entirely responsible. It has nothing to do with what our last administration did or didn't do.
Right. I also want to focus on, you know, the end of this war, not the beginning of this war, during our Friday Week in Review, if we could. George Ptak, this has nothing to do with whether Democrats support our troops or not.
I think it has everything to do with it, frankly. It's, to me, the height of hypocrisy to say that we support the troops and yet we are interested in withdrawing funding for those very same troops. How can we stop providing ammunition? How can we stop providing security? How can we stop providing body armor? How can we stop providing the vehicles and the fuel and the wherewithal to operate a military operation and say we are supporting our troops. It is unbelievable that people can say that.
Well, what people were actually saying, George, was one, that there should be a withdrawal date, or two, that all the money should be used to bring the troops home. No one was saying we should leave those troops out there sitting ducks, you know, when their ammunition is gone.
Diane and Mary both say we should stop funding.
The war. That's what Mary was saying. And I got to agree totally with Mary on her emotional reaction to this, and rational one, that it's disappointing and disgusting what happened. And, you know, she applauded Feingold. I think we need to say, where was Herb Kohl on this? Where was Ron Kind on this? Where was Steve Kagan on this? God, I went to Kagan's website this morning, Joy, and he had a statement up there that said, enough is enough. We're not going to give the president a blank check. And I thought, wow, it's a typo on the paper that he voted for this thing.
Now, it's a check through September, though, Matt Rothschild, and then it's going to be reviewed, and there are benchmarks, and it still could be the beginning of the end. Yes? No?
It's not the beginning of the end. And there's so many loopholes in this thing that George Bush could drive an unarmored truck through. And, you know, benchmarks, you can waive all the benchmarks. I mean, this vote means that 100 more U.S. troops are going to die in Iraq until September, and then they're going to do the whole thing again. And by the margin of this vote, it looks like it's going to pass again in September.
That's exactly right, because the people who voted for the measure, 2-1 in the House, and 4-1 in the United States Senate, understand the implications of an arbitrarily assigned timeline for withdrawal. They understand if the withdrawal date is March 31st of 2008 or 2009, then April 1st of that year, if you don't think all hell is broken loose over there now, wait till then.
Yeah. I saw Dave Obey being quoted saying, I hate this bill. I hate this. But, and he voted against it. But he said they were in this bind and had to do this in terms of they didn't have the votes to override a veto.
I mean, Obie's a realist, but he also, you know, he got in trouble with, I think he hates the war, too. He's been against the war for a long time, and he did get in trouble with a peace activist for scolding a peace activist in the hallway that was put on YouTube and went all the way around the web. But I applaud him for voting against this. I mean, the idea that, you know, we're putting troops in harm's way by saying we should bring the troops home, this is a canard that's been used against peace activists in this country and well-meaning citizens in this country since World War One or through Vietnam. I mean, the question is, how many U.S. soldiers are going to have to die there before we get out of there? Is it okay that 3,450 soldiers have died there already and 25,000 have been wounded? Are we going to let, you know, 3,450 more die and another 20,000 get wounded? I mean, come on. At what point do we say this is a losing venture and we don't need to sacrifice a single additional U.S. soldier, to say nothing of the Iraqi civilians who've died?
Yeah. At what point, George Petek, do we say it is okay to come home?
Well, I think it's okay when we see the progress that we expect to see from the Iraqi government, when we see the progress that we are attempting to help them accomplish for their own security, when we see the international community continue to say that this is something that needs to be done. There needs to be stability and security in the region. And I think that those are the kinds of things that the Congress is looking for, because of what was included in the bill, of course, negotiating with the White House to get something of fairly meaningful accomplished. But these timelines for progress, the expectations that are set up now that will be reviewed over the next days and weeks and months prior to the next the need for extending the funding, perhaps in September or October. I think we are hoping to see, we are expecting to see that kind of progress, and that's why the vote was overwhelmingly supportive in the Congress. People have to go back to their communities and defend their votes and explain their votes to people. They'll be coming home for the memorial recess here in the next few days. They'll be meeting with people on the parade routes in the coffee shops and explaining their support for the enterprise that's going on over there, because I believe that they see the American people supporting the troops, and that's what these votes were all about.
Brief last word on this issue, Matt.
Well, the question is, what if there is no progress? How long are we going to wait for progress? We've been waiting how long already? 4 years. And Bush's logic is, if we don't fight them there, they're going to come over here. And that logic means we've got to stay there forever.
Yeah. President Bush yesterday also talked about another issue at his news conference, that being the compromise that key Democrat Democratic and Republican Congress people arrived at with the White House on immigration reform.
This bill does not grant amnesty. Amnesty is forgiveness without a penalty. Instead, this bill requires workers here illegally to acknowledge that they broke the law, pay a fine, pass background checks, remain employed, and maintain a clean record. This bill provides the best chance to reform our immigration system and help us make certain we know who's in our country and where they are.
But the bill was attacked by both sides, Democrats and Republicans, for one reason or another. George Pedak, what do you think of this reform bill?
Well, I think that any time a bill is attacked by both sides, it probably means that there's been some progress made. I think that as the president indicated, and many supporters of immigration reform indicated, there is no amnesty here. There is an expectation that that those who are here illegally will become legal, in a sense, that when they acknowledge that the laws have been broken, that a fine ought to be paid, and that they become U.S. citizens down the road, and they get on the track to do that, not continue to break the law as they have done in the past.
Matt?
Well, it's not as bad as it could have been. That's one realization. Certainly, it's not James Sensenbrenner, mass criminalization and incarceration, which was on the table there for a while. The thing that bothers me most about this is that there's this guest worker program where people can come over for 2 years and then they've got to go back. They really will be indentured servants to the corporations who hire them because, if they misbehave while they're on the job or if they try to form a union or if they complain about the bad working conditions, the employer can just send them back. So that concerns me. Also, people who've been here a long time, even if they, pay the $5,000 fine, a lot of people aren't going to have the $5,000. They've got to go back to their home country, and that is going to break up families for a while anyway. So I think there are problems in here. I'm glad it's not as bad as some of the jingoists have wanted it to be.
Well, let me bring in some callers on this issue. Mohammed in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was just wondering if either of you noticed the difference in the president's body language and his facial expressions when he's talking about Iraq versus immigration. It was very apparent to me yesterday that he's much more confident and comfortable explaining, something even as difficult as the immigration problem than when he's talking about Iraq, which with the immigration problem, he doesn't have to really convince as many people as he has to convince that there's a reason why we are in Iraq and that we should stay there in spite of. Some days, no Iraqis die in terms of from American soldiers, but every day, an American soldier is dying in Iraq.
Well, moving on to the immigration issue, though, do you think the president, Matt Rothschild, has an easier time convincing people to go along with this?
Well, the polls show that a vast majority of Americans agree with the essence of the immigration bill, so he's on good footing there. The problem politically for Bush on immigration is with his base or with the part of his base that is xenophobic. I mean, he is going to lose a chunk of those people on the right who don't want immigrants here, who don't like the immigrants are here, or want to send them back. And so even though his poll numbers right now are below the freezing mark, they may get down to a real hard freeze here if he loses, another 3 or 4%.
I think there's a mischaracterization there, though, Matt, of Republicans or Democrats not wanting immigrants here. That mischaracterizes the debate altogether. It's not that people are afraid or ashamed or embarrassed to have immigrants in the United States of America. People want to have immigrants here that are here legally, so that they can get on the track towards citizenship legally, so that they can take the steps that are required of any nation, frankly, for people who are interested in citizenship. And to address Mohammed's question very briefly, I think Matt hit it pretty closely that this is a much less difficult problem or issue that the president or that the government is facing. And it's no surprise to me that the president looks a little more at ease. Of course, that's a relative term, but he looks a little more at ease when he's talking about some domestic issues like the immigration scenario, as he sees people in the country supporting the rule of law. This is a nation of laws. When people are here breaking the law, they ought to be confronted, and that ought to be resolved. And I think there's a much greater amount of support among the American people for resolving the immigration issue, because it's, let me just say, somewhat easier to resolve than the Iraqi war situation.
Let me bring in Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Good morning. Well, I want to disagree with Mr. Pitek. The bill is amnesty. As it's already been pointed out, those who have read the bill have pointed out that the fine that Mr. Pitek is saying is why it's not amnesty. There's no enforcement mechanism in the bill that if an individual doesn't pay that fine at the end of the 10 or 12-year period, that they can be deported. In fact, the bill gives them protections against that. So it is amnesty. It's about cheap labor. If Mr. Pitek, and apparently supports this, and the president were serious about immigration, why are we worried about just immigration from Mexico and Latin American countries? Why is it that this bill doesn't change the fact that a doctor or a skilled worker, for example, from Scandinavian companies or Scandinavian countries will still have to wait 12 to 14 years on a waiting list to come? But we're going to open our doors to the South to massive numbers of uneducated, unskilled workers. This is about cheap labor. This is about, frankly, I'm surprised Mr. Rothschild supports the current version. It's about a form of slavery. This is about bringing people into work cheaply and then sending them home.
You know, if I can address this, I appreciate the comments. But as was mentioned in the intro to the topic, there are lots of people blasting this agreement and blasting this compromise legislation. It's because it is a complicated matter. There is a question of jobs and bringing people in to take some of those jobs. But it's a situation that has not been addressed perhaps forever adequately, and here is an effort by the Democrat controlled Congress to address an issue that should have been addressed years and years ago. So it's not the be all and end all of all immigration reform, but I think it's a step in the right direction, and it does take us toward resolution sometime down the road. It doesn't solve the problem by any means, but I think it's the right step at this time.
Well, Mike didn't quite hear me clearly, because I don't support the bill. I did make the point about there being indentured servitude when companies can bring people over for 2 years, and if they try to form a union, they can send them back. Or if they complain about working conditions, they can send them back. That is a form of slavery. I agree with Mike on that. There is a bias in this bill, actually, not toward the unskilled, and that's a word I don't like, because I think a lot of people who do so-called unskilled work are very skilled at what they're doing, but toward the people who are more highly educated and are getting more highly paid jobs. And I think that's a bad change, because the current law gives preference to people who are coming in here who are relatives of citizens. And why shouldn't families be able to be reunited that way?
Yeah. I don't know if this is a cheap shot or not, but there was a report during that press conference. The president apparently answered the first question, nothing out of the ordinary, and then he was pooped on by a pigeon. Did you hear about that, Matt?
I saw the picture in the paper of him wiping off his sleeve there. But, you know, the problem with this president and with this press conference and with Congress's reaction to what's going on right now is I still think he's an unchecked president, by and large, unchecked in war-making, unchecked in what he's doing to our Constitution. He, at the press conference, supported Alberto Gonzalez, who has been behaving reprehensibly, if not criminally, and should be impeached. You know, there's a bet that he may resign tonight. I don't think it's a good bet, though.
May I say, in somewhat confrontation to Mike's comment, there is no one that I know of that believes this is an unchecked president. He in every breath he takes, every word he says, or any of his cabinet says, any of his high-level associates and advisors say, are scrutinized and read over time and time again. They even read, you and others read between the lines. To me, to say that this is an unchecked president, to me, is totally off base.
Well, he was unchecked. Two Supreme Court decisions agreed with me on that, and one lower court judge agreed with me on that. The cases of Guantanamo, the Hamden case, yeah, by Justice John Paul Stevens, Sandra Day O'Connor, and this case about the NSA spying said, you know, this is a violation of our Constitution, separation of powers, and the president's not a king. So
we are at break time, and then we will return talking about the news of the week with Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, and George Pitak, former Republican state lawmaker from Racine, government relations principal at White Hirschbeck Dudek Government Affairs in Madison. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen will talk with a guest political scientist about presidential politics and the latest public opinion polls, a poll out in Iowa. What does it say? I think it has Tommy Thompson fourth in that poll from Iowa. What do you think of that, Matt Rothschild?
Well, I was surprised. Surprised that Tommy is rising the polls in Iowa. I mean, he's made a total fool of himself, it seems to me, on the campaign trail. He made an anti-Semitic comment in front of a Jewish group, and then, you know, he made that lamentable comment that said businessmen can, you know, fire anyone just if they think their employee's gay or lesbian, and then he had to take some of that back. But, you know, he's good at retail politics. He's good at the handshaking, and he's been living in Iowa. So I suppose I shouldn't be too surprised.
George Pitak?
Same. I think that that Tommy has made it clear he's in this at least through the straw ballot this August in Iowa. He's focusing a lot of attention there, and I would challenge Matt to come up with any political figure currently or at any time in the past who didn't make some gaffe in his or her presentation that didn't need to be retracted at some point in time. So, I admit that some of the things Tommy has said were off base and should have been resolved and rectified, which he's attempted to do. But that's not unusual for those in the public limelight, in the spotlight, in the fishbowl, to make comments that they subsequently regret.
And there are gaffes and there are gaffes. I mean, talking to a Jewish group and applauding them essentially for their money grubbing habits is a little low.
Oops. Well, I think that's mischaracterizing also the comment that he made. It wasn't money grubbing. He was giving them some credit for being fairly astute in the financial world, and frankly, I think that can be viewed as fairly complimentary.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about the White House liaison or former aide, Monica Goodling, and whether or not she added any more fuel to the fire to get Alberto Gonzalez to resign when she testified before Congress this week. Matt Rothschild?
Wow, another Monica in a blue dress, but there we were. And she said some really damning things. I mean, she admitted that she herself had crossed the line by using a political litmus test for career Justice Department officials, and I'm sure she was doing so under instruction. And the really damning thing was that she said that the Attorney General was trying to couch her testimony couch her recollections before she testified, and she said, I just thought maybe we shouldn't have had that conversation. And so the Justice Department said they were just trying to console her, I suppose, just the way they were trying to console Attorney General Ashcroft.
It's funny how one can read a story and hear some comments and have totally different point of view on what took place. To me, it doesn't. It's not unusual for an attorney general or his deputies to try to let's just say reconstruct or establish the same line of reasoning or the same line of understanding of what took place. If there aren't adequate notes and records, then it's no surprise to me that that discussions took place. So we understand each other and what our recollections are of what occurred in sometimes in the fairly distant past. So those kind of discussions are no surprise to me. Ms. Goodling admit to going up to and perhaps crossing the line. I doubt that she did that with any clear direction from anyone above. It's not unusual for people at that level to make decisions and to make recommendations that are ultimately either accepted or rejected by those who are receiving the recommendations. But to me, nothing unusual happened, and it's nothing that didn't happen in the Nixon administration or the Carter administration or the Clinton administration. So that's life in the political world.
Yeah. Real quick, I mean, it's one thing to get your stories together about a policy matter, but to get your stories together and have your boss tell you to get your story together about your testimony relating to your boss is an entirely different thing.
Well, the Senate says it's going to hold a vote, a no-confidence vote on Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. It was possibly going to be this week, but now apparently delayed until next week. If the Senate votes no confidence, is he out of there, George P. Tack?
I doubt it. I think this goes toward Matt's comment that we have an unchecked president. Every move and every individual who is in the cabinet and anywhere else in the president's cadre of advisors is checked up and down every day. By their political opponents and by the media, which may also fall in line with their political opponents. So I doubt that the president is going to withdraw his support for Gonzalez, and I doubt that Gonzalez will succumb to what might be termed a witch hunt by the political operatives mm-hmm. there.
Do you think the same thing, Matt Rothschild, when it comes to he's not going to resign and the president's not going to make
him? I don't know. I've lost so many bets on, you know, Rumsfeld resigning. I don't want to put anything on the line on this. But the idea that a president is checked because there are hearings, I mean, you can have hearings, but the president can continue to do his illegal action until Congress decides to do something like impeach him or impeach Gonzalez or impeach Cheney. I mean, they're still able to do their NSA spying. They're still able to do their torture and disappearances. They're still able to wage this illegal war. They got the prosecutors, federal prosecutors canned for really dirty reasons. I mean, they're able to do what they want.
Well, speaking of someone being under fire, it looks like the chair of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, Joe Winicky, is being asked to step down by, I believe, some Eau Claire County Democrats are calling on Winicky to resign because he is being paid to lobby on behalf of AT&T, a big supporter of that video competition bill. Should Joe Winicky resign because he's lobbying for AT&T, George Petak?
I think not. This is a free country, and to me, the reason why an individual is hired to lobby on behalf of an enterprise or on behalf of an industry is because he or she is seen as being effective in doing a couple of things: gaining access to high-level decision makers and having an opportunity with the advice and the consent of the client to attempt to influence some decisions that are being made by people in these upper-level decision-making positions, like legislators and like the governor's office. So, to me, there's nothing unusual to know that a highly recognizable and highly visible Democrat would be asked by AT&T to go and visit with the governor or to go and visit with the legislators on behalf of that particular client's interest. It happens all the time. I guess I would have a difference of opinion with the Democrats on virtually everything, but in this particular case, strongly disagree that that Joe ought to step down. I think he's done a pretty fair job as the chairman of the Democratic Party. They have, number one, regained control of the state Senate. They made massive gains in toward control. They don't have control as yet in the state assembly. But perhaps even because of those successes, Joe is seen as an effective communicator and is brought on board by AT&T. And my guess is AT&T is one of several clients that Joe is probably either has or will have because he's an effective communicator and highly respected on the Democratic side.
Matt, what do you think?
Making me feel a lot better there, George, I got to say. not to quote scripture or anything, but you can't serve God and mammon at the same time. Not that the Democratic Party equals God, but, you know, Joe Wernicke, yes, it's a free country. He can lobby all he wants, but he can't lobby and be head of the Democratic Party at the same time.
I mean, is this in the bylaws? I don't know what the Democrat Party bylaws say, but to me, it's a no-brainer. He ought to be able to do what he believes.
Let's see why Matt says he shouldn't. Yeah.
Because it's a conflict of interest. It's a symptom of what's terribly wrong with our political system here, that private money dominates our political system. The interests of the Democratic Party are not identical to AT&T's interests. I hope not, anyway. And look, Joe Wernicke made a big deal that he was going to take this position for $0. Maybe the Democratic Party of Wisconsin would be better off to pay him whatever he thinks he's worth, whether that's, you know, $100,000 or whatever, and have him work strictly for the Democratic Party and not confuse the two roles of being head of the Democratic Party and a shill for some corporate clients.
Yeah, that's what the Wood County Democrats apparently said, that Wernicke either needs to serve as chair of the party or as AT&T, but not both. And the La Crosse County Democrats fell one vote short of passing a resolution calling for Wernicke to stop lobbying or resign. So I guess Wernicke, though, says he sees nothing wrong with working as a lobbyist and that party members knew this. And apparently he's going to run unopposed for another two-year term, as the party said.
You know, it seems to me that there's a little naivety here, perhaps by some of the members of these few county parties, but who should AT&T hire to go visit the Democrats? I mean, excuse me. He is the most visible, the most outspoken, perhaps the most effective party chairman that the party has ever had. And why wouldn't AT&T or IBM or anybody in the telecommunications or the video industry or the pharmaceutical industry hire somebody who has proven time and time again to be an effective communicator on the Democrat side for Democrat causes? Now, is AT&T a Democrat-oriented organization? Absolutely not. They're nonpartisan. They hire people. They on both sides. They have customers on both sides. But in order to communicate their message effectively on the Democrat side of the aisle, you know what they do? They hire a Democrat. No surprise here.
Well, George, I certainly know why the companies would want to hire the head of the state Democratic Party, but why would the Democratic Party chair, and why should Democrats around the state want that Democratic Party chair up on the corporate auction block? That's really the question here.
It's not a corporate auction block. They are asking somebody to go in and deliver a message. And you know something? Joe can do that. He's proven it time and time again.
But why should he be delivering AT&T's message instead of doing 40 hours a week or 60 hours a week the Democratic Party's message?
I just think this is interesting that our guest on the right is defending the Democratic Party chair and our guest on the left is not. So we have just a few more minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about gas prices. Some Wisconsin service stations have decided to stop selling fuel based on the sky-high gas prices. And some are doing it out of protest. Some are doing it because they say it costs them a lot of money with all the credit card transactions. A lot of surveys out about gas prices, too, saying that right now it's not stopping us from driving around on Memorial Day weekend. We're still going to hit the road despite the record high, you know, $3.50 or so a gallon gas. Matt Rothschild, what do you have to say about these high gas prices?
$3.40 this morning at 5 o'clock in Madison. That's all I know when I filled up, or got $10 worth anyway.
$10 about a gallon and a half.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a real problem. And my question is, how low are Bush's numbers going to go? I mean, if he's at 28% or 30% approval rating, you know, as gas prices keep going up and hit $4 in some places around the country, and the economy might slow down as a consequence, I got to think his numbers are going to go lower.
George Peter?
Well, of course, it's the president's fault that we have high gas prices. I mean, that's the mantra that that the left has used for, let's see, the last 6.5-7 years. I'm not sure George Bush has any control over gasoline prices, but certainly it's a concern. But it's also a supply and demand issue, and to me, the gas prices will go down when the supply reaches the adequate levels. There are certainly supply problems. There are refinery problems. There's competition on the ethanol side. There are a number of things that are impacting the overall price of gasoline. We're going to travel this weekend somewhere, and we're going to pay what we have to pay. I doubt that the president's going to ratings are going to go down or up based on gasoline prices.
Let me get one caller in on this. Bill in Orfordville. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, this supply and demand on gasoline is horsefooey. There's plenty of gasoline out there, so I don't understand why the price is up there. I haven't seen one station yet outside of the fellas that voluntarily are closing down that doesn't have gasoline to sell. So why the price?
Well, Matt?
Well, you know, there's, you know, price gouging going on, and the idea that they're pass a law against price gouging, I'm for that law, but price gouging is capitalism. That's what capitalism is about. You know, you get as much as you can. You get what the market will bear. You know, the Iraq war didn't help oil prices. Threatening Iran didn't help oil prices. Those are two ways that Bush has contributed to it. Oil company manipulation of the prices at the refinery level hasn't helped oil prices either.
Yeah, the survey that I think, I don't know if it was a AAA survey, but it found that on average, people said the current price is not going to change their driving habits. But once it gets to $4.38 a gallon, then we're going to change our driving habits.
There's a magic number for you.
Well, when will we change our driving habits based on gas prices? Matt Rothschild, what do you think? We have less than a minute.
Well, I think people gradually are going to not drive as much. Gradually, they're going to get cars that might get much better mileage, or they'll be getting the cars like the Priuses that go, you know, 45 miles to the gallon. And I just think it's going to take a while. But I think the age of the SUV may be declining, unless it's a, you know, it's an SUV that goes
last,
a long way.
Last word, very brief word, George Petek, less than 30 seconds.
Sure. I think people are changing their habits. I think that there needs to be a greater emphasis on alternative fuels and get us off the reliance on foreign oil. And, you know, those things, like a tugboat trying to move an aircraft carrier.
It
just doesn't happen overnight.
And have a great Memorial Day weekends, George Petek and Matt Rothschild.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.